Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Waiting is over and done with at last. Formula One is back and the goosebumps are here already. We've already seen Drive to Survive, binged watched it completely. And the excitement, as you can tell, is at a fever pitch. So the Bahrain GP is here at last. But again, as usual, there seems to be one big story that will dominate the entire proceeding. Verstappen winning. The question is by how much? But here at the Inside Line F1 podcast, Kunal, we dive into the deeper stories. That's not the kind of stuff we do. What are you looking forward to the most from the race?
Well. Twitter, social media is abuzz with what is going to actually happen to Christian Horner. We know that there's that investigation that's going on for inappropriate behavior. We saw him at the car launch. We first thought we'll get an answer from Red Bull on Christian Horner's fate. Before the car launch, then we thought we'll get it during pre-season testing. And all along, we were told we'll know around the first race. So could it be before the first race of the season? And there's only speculation. One doesn't know what's really going to happen there. But here's how I see it. If Christian Horner is at Bahrain, which we will know in the next few hours for everybody listening in, I don't think they're going to make an announcement of the results of that investigation. Why? Because if, you know, they make the announcement and he is guilty and he's asked to leave the team, I don't think they're going to do this publicly. They don't want all that negative press and, you know, so on. And of course, the other way of looking at it is if he is in Bahrain and they make the announcement, then he is exonerated, right? Because same logic, they don't want to get public with how it's going to be with Christian and the whole result. So that's going to be the focus, not will Verstappen win again? Will the RB20 be as dominant as everyone thinks with the new design and so on? That's going to be my story to look out for, if at all it happens in Bahrain.
But that's hardly even a question, right? Verstappen winning, the RB20 doing well. At this stage, it's just a given. And when there are some things in life that are so clear and so visible and evident, you don't even think about them as much, which is why this is interesting, because I get a feeling Christian Horner is someone who's a bit too big to kick out, right? I mean, surely with the team of the stature of Red Bull, even though they are that big and they have that corporate machinery behind them, Christian Horner, like, you can't kick the man who built the entire team out, right? That'll be like the whole Spider-Man scene where they kicked out Osborn and then he becomes a micro villain of sorts or something like that. But is he something that you can genuinely get rid of in that team? Because I feel he's a bit too big of a personality.
First, let's understand, what do you also mean by too big a personality? You know, we remember Jean Todt for the dominant era he had at Ferrari. We remember, of course, Toto Wolff and Lewis Hamilton for the dominant era they had that Mercedes. But Christian Horner is the only team principal in recent times to have had two dominant eras with two different drivers under two different regulations with two different power unit manufacturers, with Vettel and Renault from 2010 to 2013, and now what's ongoing with Max and Honda and Adrian Newey and the like. So he is a massive personality, very shrewd, very astute. I can say that in my personal dealings that I've had with him last year as well, right? But I don't believe a person can ever be bigger than the team or the brand of Red Bull Racing, right? And to give you an example, if Michael Schumacher in 2006 could have been put in a situation where he had to leave Ferrari, right, for the person who actually built one of the most dominant eras in that time, I don't believe Red Bull will have to back off from making such a decision just because of Christian's persona and his largesse in the sport, if that's the word, right? I also think Red Bull will take it a lot more seriously now that Ford is making all those sounds. You know, here's a manufacturer that's come on their terms, they're being Red Bull's terms, has signed up, put in the money, put in the, you know, Red Bull powertrains and so on. And now Ford, which is, of course, a bigger global brand in the automotive space, right, than Red Bull has ever been, turns around and says, we are frustrated with the lack of transparency. So it's when the partners who get involved, that's when Red Bull has a bigger challenge, longer term challenge. Right. And could it be that Red Bull, who normally just promotes drivers from AlphaTauri or whatever the team is called, Racing Bulls to Red Bull Racing, will now look for a team principal internally, who's available to be promoted as team principal? So lots of questions entering Bahrain off track, which is great for the sport because the sport grows that much more when there are off track stories as well. Because truth be told, we may not even have an on track story, or maybe the narratives are just the same as they've been in 2023. Red Bull doing the dominant work, the typical three or four teams chasing them. And if I can just switch to the only on-track story I'm really curious about, Saumil, is what on earth is up with Alpine, right? The one team every single expert has raised the question about is Alpine. What do you think?
My only question is, why do we care? Because for some reason, it seems like nobody does. I mean, not least the teams and the drivers itself, because every year when you come out with a new car, right, there's obviously lots of PR hype around it. You tend to build it up quite a fair bit that, hey, we've solved this problem, or hey, we've worked on that problem. And you try to amp it up as if this is the car that will solve all your problems. With Alpine, it's the first year in history where I don't remember anything quite like that, or no sentiment or no sort of momentum attached with the team at all in the media. It's like they itself don't want to talk about the car. And that's kind of interesting because every year, even though they change their management a couple of times every season, there's always some sort of sentiment, some sort of hype, somewhere that they say that, okay, we have targeted this area in the car and we're now going to try to fix this. Nothing this time. And nobody knows what they are like. It's such a mystery. When we had Otmar Safnauer on the podcast, we tried to ask him why Alpine is such a mystery. I mean, why does the management change? Why do they not win? And he said so much of it is down to legacy as well, where Alpine just haven't invested in the right people or the right technology over the course of the last few years. But take a look at this now, Kunal. In the same period, Aston Martin have made that big leap. McLaren have now gone from being lower midfield to properly competing for podiums. Alpine are a team that have been competing at a similar scale with so-called higher ambitions for such a long time. Where are they? Why are they? Are they just the midfield Haas?
Let's find out what's going to happen on track. The pecking order, as we call it, will be known this Saturday. Because free practice, people will still sandbag. They will still just test their systems and upgrades and whatever the car packages, their setups that they have. Saturday qualifying is where the truth will be told. Let's see where they stack up, everybody, including Alpine, on the Saturday. But, Saumil, here's another thing. I don't believe the pecking order in Bahrain will actually be the pecking order for the season.
Of course.
And here's why. Because and let's explain it to our listeners, right? The teams have had thousands of kilometers of testing in Bahrain now, as we already know. Last week was pre-season testing. We were actually supposed to have a post-testing episode with Craig Scarborough or Scarbs F1, but he was on holiday. We couldn't get his internet to make it work, so we're probably going to have him a couple of races down the season. Also, what's happened is on the weekend of testing, Saumil Arora was the voice of the Indian Supercross League, and he's inhaled a lot of dirt and dust from the Supercross. So you can actually hear him in very limited capacity. He's still as bubbling, just that his throat doesn't support him, right? But talking of indexation, Bahrain pecking order will be heavily indexed on just Bahrain because teams have had several and several kilometers just to optimize for Bahrain, right? So will that be a reflection of what the pecking order could be for the first few races of the season? I don't think so. I think Saudi Arabia will be a different one because it's a different track, different whatever that'll happen. So that's going to be interesting to make note of, right? And, you know, some of the other things I'm looking forward to this weekend, Saumil, it's the 20th year since the first ever Bahrain Grand Prix. It's also the only F1 circuit I've actually driven in a race car at. So it's a special moment for me as well. There's never been a retirement-free Bahrain Grand Prix. So I'm excited for that. 30 races that are there in the calendar, 672 points available in the Drivers' Championship. Yeah. Let's see how many of those does Max Verstappen end up scoring all by himself, right? Also, I think, you know, typically if Somil had his voice supporting him, this is a joke you would have made. But you remember the drain cover issues that we had in Bahrain in day two and day three of testing. We probably won't have them again because the drains have now been covered with cement. So something like a human rights joke that Sommel would have cracked in the Kingdom of Bahrain or for the Kingdom of Bahrain. You don't like something, just shut it up completely, right? But interestingly, in the 20 years that Bahrain GP has been around, only five teams have won here. Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, Renault and Braun have actually won here. And only three different teams have actually won in the last 3 years, right? So I pretty much think this will stay. It will still be three different teams or, you know, the same ones that will continue: Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes. So do you think there could be an outside chance for somebody else to challenge for the win, Sommel?
I mean, the win is a bit of a long shot. As much as... So the thing is, when you have an F1 podcast, right, and I'm sure you'll also resonate with the same sentiment, sometimes you sort of feel like you have to over-dramatize stuff to excite people and be like, hey, wow, there's something to watch for. I think, still realistically, we have to understand there is one way to watch Formula 1 that we have to carry forward from last year, which is take your left hand, put it on the top left of your screen and block out just one person. Pretend number two is number one. And that number three is number two, and so on and so forth. And only then will you actually be able to enjoy Formula One, because realistically, F1.5 is where the fun really is. And over there, there is a chance for an outside win. And the kind of stories that this battle for P2 in the team's championship has is just fascinating, because look at it this way. Ferrari have openly come out and said that they are trying to solve their deck problem from last year, which, by the way, remember, was the reason why they lost their podium to Fernando Alonso. That's something that they've apparently worked with on their car. Watch this weekend. Are Ferrari actually as low deck as they want to be? If they're not, maybe say lap 34 into the race, that's when you know that there is a bigger story for the year to track. Same with McLaren. McLaren finally have a car that apparently, according to all the experts, Kunal, now is well balanced. And we have been pointing this out, and we did this initially for Max as well in 2021. And I remember listening to you at that point and being, what are you talking about? But you said, Max is making far too many key errors in key places. The same can be said for Lando Norris in these days as well. I'm not talking about Sochi, because that was more driver judgment. You can't blame him for that. But moments like Qatar qualifying, when it all comes down to you, but you make a crucial error in that moment. For McLaren, it seems to be that the stars are aligning. They have a car that's working well. In that moment, is it going to be Norris who actually delivers, or, like we saw last year, Piastri, who's always there when the going gets tough? Like, that is also such a fun micro story to track in F1.5.
Formula 1.5, your best talking point all along, given that Formula 1 is dominated heavily by Max Verstappen. But very eager, will Checo Perez still continue to lead the Formula 1.5 standings? Helmut Marko has laid down the marker, saying if he wants to be in contention for the 2025 seat at Red Bull, he needs to, at the very minimum, finish second. Can you imagine? A driver is no longer told you need to go win. Helmut Marko usually has always told me the other way for other junior drivers. Speak to him about five junior drivers racing in Formula 2, and for all five of them, he would tell me the target for that particular driver is to win the Formula 2 championship. But here, for Checo, they've lowered the bar, saying just second is enough, right? That's one. You mentioned McLaren. The eagerness that everyone has, especially I do, is will they have a strong start to the season, or will they start slow again and then build up, right? And we've spoken about this several times. 24-day season, do you start with a very strong baseline car and then develop it? And you know, when you do that, you sort of taper off, like what Aston Martin we saw last year, or do you start slow like McLaren and then you build it? And something I've said even in the bold predictions episode we did, can a team do both? Have a massive jump between two seasons, which is 23 and 24, and still have the aggressive development cycle the way McLaren did in 2023. So lots of interesting points out there. But Sommel, Mercedes, what do you think of Mercedes? You know, James Allison actually said in typical British English, it's looking all right. That's what he turned around and said.
Yeah, it's a little hard to tell, isn't it? And all the experts on track are saying that even though they have made a step up, the car is still, it's still not there in areas where you want it to be. It's certainly friskier than last year for sure. A little more on the edge and a little more in terms of raw pace, somewhat more closer towards where Mercedes wanted to be. But there are, again, other aspects that at least the experts on track claim that they are still struggling with. And more than the car, right, which is a big mystery, for me, the bigger story is watching the dynamic in the team. Because now that Lewis has been announced to be leaving the team at the end of the year, has that changed the dynamic with which they deal with each other? Does Toto will suddenly not start to suck up to Lewis on the radio when the car is not nice? Because if you remember last year, he was constantly coming on the radio and literally begging to Lewis, like, Lewis, I know the car is bad. Please drive it. It's kind of like he was indebted to Lewis. But I wonder, does that body language change this year? Does Toto become a lot more harsh, a lot more direct? And also, does George Russell now take the lead? Not literally, but in terms of the way he manages the entire team, the way he's positioned, does he now suddenly become the team leader at such a young age with someone like Lewis in the team? Are there secrets that start to be hidden already from Lewis? Like, that sort of body language is something that I really want to be tracking this year. Like, how do Mercedes actually work with Lewis? That'll be fun.
Yeah, the radio explanation you gave is fantastic, because we have seen the last couple of years in this ground effect era how, you know, like you explained, Mercedes has been a little humble on the radio. Like, okay, we've made a mess of the car, but please drive it. So that's going to be interesting to track. But I'll tell you what, I don't believe Mercedes is going to block out Lewis Hamilton, especially if it's something about the 24 car to make it go quicker, to make it better, etc. They will have him there. But if there's something about 25, even Lewis wouldn't be expecting to be, you know, invited to those meetings, right? So I think they will handle it very well. There's a 26-year-old ambassadorship that both of them have enjoyed. So I don't believe this is going to go down that road. But I'll tell you another road that Formula One...
No, yeah. But the interesting thing is, sorry to cut in, but the interesting thing is, we've not heard the unfiltered thoughts of Toto Wolff yet. Yeah. He's obviously had the PR answer, which is, yeah, I understand, and so on and so forth. But like Gunther Steiner has gone out to the media and actually expressed whatever he has in mind, Toto probably will wait for 10 years until a new book comes in on Mercedes, and that's where he'll reveal everything. So at this moment in time, we really don't know what the actual sentiment is like. And I wonder, because I heard the timing of it was something that surprised him, and also the manner in which, like, hey, if you really had to leave, why sign a contract extension and that sort of... It's interesting. And even you must have seen that clip from Drive to Survive as well, right? That's been viral, about where they have their contract negotiation. And Lewis is very open and saying, even though it might be scripted, he says, I don't have as much time as you do. I wonder, is there tension? Is there friction? Do they change the way they deal with each other?
True. And, you know, we spoke of Michael Schumacher, Ferrari, just earlier in the episode. But that's the same with how Mercedes also treated Lewis, right? They were looking, Lewis was expecting, at least that's what the media claims, a longer-term contract. But he was given a 1+1 year contract, right? So Mercedes was also preparing. And, you know, this is typical. You have to prepare for the pipeline, right? The succession plan, as they call it, whether it's in businesses, whether it's in Formula One teams and so on. Who next will replace your star athlete, your star ambassador? And that's what they've sort of put in place, right? And talking of star out here, right, the mind is switching to what is F1's star trick to hopefully make racing better. That's the DRS, the wretched DRS wing, which you just press and opens up, right? DRS from this season, as you pointed out, Sommel, will be available from one whole lap earlier. So typically, till last year, DRS was available two full racing laps after the race started. Right now, DRS will be available one racing lap after the race starts. I mean, I don't know what you think of this, but I really wish there was a way. I mean, this formula was brought in so that the dependence on DRS would be, you know, reduced. Here, we are now seeing one whole lap that's going to have DRS, one whole extra lap.
Yeah. And the hypothetical scenario is kind of fun, right? Because last year, a major problem of the entertainment value of the races was that Max would have a good getaway, and by lap 2.5, he would already have a 2.5-second gap, which would mean that he's almost impossible to catch in that stage. Maybe this solves it, because if you have the leader stuck within the DRS range for that one extra lap, it becomes harder for you to leave that train. And of course, now that someone else is latched onto your DRS train, it makes it easier for them to follow for longer. So maybe it solves that. But I'm assuming for anyone in the mid-pack who wants to keep their position, or even if you're, say, someone like P2, P3, fending off competition, this makes it all the more worse for you. Is it fair to say unnecessary again? But it is what it is, right? I suppose we're going to be seeing more chaos, more passes on lap 2, and but I don't think it should significantly make a difference to the entertainment value of the race, which is where also a fun point to be... Sorry, you were saying?
Absolutely. The entertainment value, eventually, that's what Bahrain has actually offered, right? The last three season openers, of course, they've been in Bahrain. We've seen epic battles out there, okay? We saw in 2023, we had Alonso doing all those overtakes, including your favorite driver, Carlos Sainz, who lost the podium there. Then 2022 was Leclerc Verstappen. 2021 was, of course, Hamilton, Leclerc desert in the duel, as they've been sort of promoting. But I think entertainment will be there. Also, I'm told that the circuit of Bahrain, the Bahrain International Circuit, has not been resurfaced in the 20 years it's been around. So that's why tire degradation is so high at this race. So tire degradation, typically when we've seen that, we've seen tire deg having entertaining races as well. So let's see what the entertainment is like this weekend. By the way, the race is on the Saturday, not the Sunday. I was just going to say, let's see what the entertainment is like on Sunday, but it's a Saturday.
Well, I'm glad at least you didn't say join us for the season opener in Melbourne. I'm glad that habit is gone.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely. 20 years and...
But okay, yeah, predictions. Yeah, predictions very quickly. No point talking about the win. Let's not even go there. Let's keep it more tangible, right? Who do you think qualifies second? Because the race, again, there are so many big questions that we have about DEG that honestly is kind of futile to answer them now or even predict them now, because we don't know what the long-run behavior of McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, or hell, even Aston Martin and Lance Stroll is going to be like. Yeah, but in terms of qualifying, where do you see it stacking up? I get a feeling, I say Carlos Sainz second, Oscar Piastri third. I really, really feel that this guy could be up there. Not because of the technical skills, but the mentality he brings into these tough situations. Where do you see this going?
I think it's going to be Max Verstappen who's going to be second.
Of course.
Huh? Yeah. What? I think a pole is going to go to Ferrari, but, you know, with their tire decks going the other way, it waits to be seen how much of their, single lap pace has been sacrificed for this, right? But let me put it this way. I think pole position has won 6 times in the last 12 years, right? And the front row has won 10 times in the last 12 years. So either way, P1, P2 is going to be enough for Max to just go claim the win. But yeah, it's exciting. It's probably the most exciting. It is the most exciting qualifying session because we really don't know what it's like, who's going to be there. So I think I think Nico Hülkenberg, fine, let me put that. Let's watch him for qualifying antics. He's been the most exciting driver in qualifying in that Haas. So I'm going to throw a complete, left side view of what everyone should look out for.
Let's wait and see. But folks, whatever your predictions are, send them in on our Twitter and Instagram pages. We'll be more than glad to discuss them with you over there on social media. But folks, thank you for listening to us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. We'll be back on Sunday itself for our post-race review, because remember, race is on Saturday for the first time, for the first of three times this year. So subscribe to the Inside Line F1 podcast. Stay tuned with whatever we're doing, and we'll see you very soon, very shortly. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.